Osayande from the historically Black neighborhood of Swarthmore with family 7 generations strong. Welcome to episode 2, Wesley AME Church, Strategies for Thriving, the Role of the Black Church. The AME is the first organized Black denomination in the U.S.
Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine, heir of salvation.
Hi, my name is Kim Terrell Durnell, and one of the social activities that I just remember, everything was really centered around the church, Wesley AME Church. We would have watch night service and watch the old year go out and the new year come in, which is very, very important tradition. From Easter pageants, we did the teas, the Black History teas, which I just could close my eyes and remember, you know, going to Miss Virginia Black's house to actually hand do all the programs. We punched the holes, we tied the ribbon and create all the program. And then we would, each person would make the tea sandwiches up and cut the little tiny tea sandwiches. And you would be dressed to the nine with your hat included because you would have a hat show. And just like the whole preparation, and everyone always worked together. No matter what was going on, they could argue, fuss and fight, but then they would go right back and work together. The church was the center of a lot of things. In the summer, Vacation Bible School, we do Christmas pageants. Just remember Easter pageants. You can walk in and sit down and see where everyone always sat and where they sang and what they did. In August, we would have homecoming. And at the homecoming, I know Van Jones would always do a poem. And it would be people who were from the neighborhood would come back for homecoming. It would always be in August. And then the first Sunday in October, the Union Gospel Group from Delmar, Maryland would come. They've been coming as long as I've been alive, probably about 55 years. We figured out that they've been coming here, that they were from my grandmother. 55 years.
So you're 50?
No, I'm 45. But they turned, they last week celebrated their 66th anniversary of the group being together. And I was talking to my mom and we were trying to figure it out because it's from my grandmother's hometown. And they've been coming probably 55 years, if not more.
Is that a connection then that Delmar, Maryland, the folks coming from Delmar to this, specifically this neighborhood, with the neighborhood having people from Maryland?
Yes.
How is that? Who's that connection?
My grandmother grew up there. That's Helen Holloway. That's where she was born and raised. And it's on the line. So half of it is Delaware and half of it is Maryland. And I remember going down there and the dirt roads and the church, how it was a church. And then you would walk across the field to the house where we would have the repast. Like they had a it wasn't even a hall. It's literally one room and it has a bathroom and it's still there. It's still like that. They're doing construction now to try and redo and add on to the church. But they've been coming. It was family members that would come up and the Union Gospel Group, they would just sing together and they would do just a concert. And we would open the doors and you would just, people walking through the neighborhood or whatever would stop outside and just hear the singing. So the church was just the center of everything that really went on in the neighborhood. We would block the streets and just do everything.
Rachel Paston, former editor of the Swarthmoreian newspaper, in an article about Wesley's 100th anniversary, affirms, standing up for righteousness in the face of oppression is in the denomination's DNA. Like that time Epsilon and Allen and them went to pray at the church. And don't you know, the usher tried to, right in the middle of the prayer, get him to stand up and go to the balcony. The AME traces its origin to a group of Black Methodists who in 1787 left St. George Methodist Episcopal Church at 4th and Arch Streets in Philadelphia because of racial discrimination. The new congregation brought land at 6th and Lombard Streets its lot is the longest continually owned real estate by Black Americans anywhere in the nation. Here's my sister, Evangelist Elizabeth Annette Lee Holmes, adding more historical context.
So Richard Allen was a minister, an educator, writer, and one of America's most active and influential Black leaders. In 1794, he founded the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the first independent Black denomination in the United States. He opened his first AME church in 1794 in Philadelphia.
Here's a fun fact. Richard Allen, along with others, took the Methodist Episcopal Conference to the PA Supreme Court in 1816 and was declared free. You see, the MEC was trying to get the keys and the money. What is AME, you ask? The church was organized by people of African descent and heritage. The church's roots are of the family of Methodist churches. Methodism provides an orderly system of rules and regulations and places emphasis on a plain and simple gospel. Episcopal refers to the form of government under which the church operates. It means that the church is governed by bishops. In 2021, Wesley AME Church Swarthmore celebrated their 100th year anniversary. Here's longtime Wesley member and steward Jeannie Terrell.
It started in Jones Hall. There wasn't a Black church in the community, and most of the people in the community would go to Morton or someplace else. So they got together and started meeting at Jones Hall to form the church.
Around what year?
And that was 1921. The building was, the church was built in 27, which was, you know, pretty good. And they organized. They decided they would come under the AME church.
At the turn of the century, Jones Hall was originally a boarding home for Black workers. The Jones family, a Black family, was one of the first families to live in Swarthmore prior to its incorporation. Later, Jones Hall became the family home on one level and a community space on another, providing a place for Black social groups and where the church could meet. Here's Kim, Jeannie's daughter, providing more history.
Okay, so the founding members got together. They had a meeting about creating a church in Swarthmore. There was enough people in the community of Swarthmore to serve a church right in this community without them having to go outside of the community. So they had a meeting where they organized. They had some of the bishops and the community members. They got together and voted to decide to create Wesley AME Church. It opened in Jones Hall, and then in 1927,
October
26, 1927, they built the church.
1921.
They built the church. 1927, right? 1921, the church started.
Built in
1927, they laid the cornerstone down at 232 Bowdoin Avenue in Swarthmore, and that's where the church has been ever since, with help, you know, from some of the churches in the community as far as donating like benches and some of the pulpit furniture. And the community at that time was very inspirational, as like doing a fuel club to help pay for the heat and, well, the oil for to warm the church. Like, you didn't have to be a member. It was all based on the community supporting the church. So then on the other flip side, the church became that community center or community hub for the Black community.
Thaddeus Adams, fourth generation HBN, discusses strategies for thriving. Our families have known each other for five generations.
I saw the church as a hub for the community where people, all the social events took part around the church. You got values of family. You got values of adults. You were taught manners there. Every child basically went to Sunday school then when I was out here, but you went to church three times a day, which was really hard because you had to go in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening services.
The Adams Homestead is right next to the church, so they had no choice. They had to go to church three times a day.
Funerals then. men were held in that church in the evening. And as children, they sit us on the front pew right in front of the casket, which scared us to death. We swore that person was moving. They set you right in front of the casket as a kid and you couldn't move.
It's a small church. That's a Wesley type of rite of passage as a child. I also remember sitting up front staring at the caskets.
But I looked at the church, it gave me a foundation for awareness of respect for adults. And you found out it was great support from everyone. When I came here, like, everyone supported each other so much. And the church played a key part because there was no wealth in this community. And the church was a center of activities and whatnot.
My paternal aunt, Deaconess Darsh Rooley, the Black church, a beacon of light.
Well, the Black church was a home. We could go there when we couldn't go anyplace else.
A safe place.
A safe place, yes.
Since its inception, the Black church and Black communities have had a history of feeding each other as a form of survival, ministry, economics, and love. Examples of benevolence, like the Free African Society, co-founded by Alan Jones, a collective of Black leadership, along with the Quaker Society in 1787, provided mutual aid to the Black community. Darsh Rooley from First Baptist Church, Darby.
Yeah, I used to, we cooked for 300 or 400 people, and we did funerals, we did anniversaries, we did... I actually did a couple weddings, and we did whatever. And if the pastor called me and said that we needed to have dinner for so many people, then I would call other people and say, can you help out? And it wasn't a paying job then. And so they used to just come. They'd come and help clean the chicken, and then they would...
Back when you burn the hair off it.
Yeah, back when you... And then they would come and just help prepare to do whatever they had to do. And most of the time we would ask people to bring a cake. So they would bring, we'd end up having cake galore. And we always had enough that we fixed the plate for the pastor and his wife to take home so that they didn't have to cook either the next day or whatever.
What drew you to doing that work? Why did you do that work?
Because my brother was the pastor, and he asked me.
The pastor, Reverend Lee, First Baptist Church, was my paternal uncle. We called him Uncle Butch. You weren't like spiritually drawn to food ministry?
Well, I was. He knew that I liked doing that. And he, you know, I did like doing that. And I like to make people feel good.
I remember another thing about this community. The church was. I remember on Sundays when the service was over, Janie probably could remember this too. The pastor would walk through the neighborhood and families would invite the pastor in to eat with his children. That was his normal thing. He'd walk past to the neighborhood and people would invite the pastor in to have dinner with him with his children. It was just an every Sunday occurrence when service was over.
Yeah.
Would the pastor be from the community?
He wasn't usually from the community, but, you know, he could have lived in Philadelphia or wherever, but he usually wasn't from the community, but he would eat, walk through, and families would ask him to have dinner with him, and his children also. That was just common. You didn't turn him down.
It was a competition almost, right?
Yeah.
I grew up in a very small church. And it was the same thing where the pastor went to eat at different people's houses almost every Sunday. And we weren't allowed to eat until the pastor was served. So it, you know, but that's the way it was. We didn't have much money in the church, but we had a lot of love and a lot of food.
So did the pastor start off being all thin and then...
They did. They were small built men and women. And then they were obese by the end. This is a common question about the AME church. Do AME pastors come from the same neighborhood the church resides in?
To answer your question about the pastors being from the community, with the AME church, it's connectional. So a pastor is assigned to a church. And they are reassigned every year. So, you know, they could be in the different districts, different areas. We have AME churches even in Bermuda and in Africa and everywhere. So when you're assigned to an area, like we are in the South District, We have 17 churches within that South District in the connectional area. So a pastor is reassigned every year. So that kind of to help, like, you know, they may be that it's someone that came up through the churches in the community, but it could be someone that's from a totally different area.
So who offers continuity in the church?
The officers. So your pastor is assigned. Your officers are appointed.
Name them.
And stewards, we have...
Stewards are appointed.
Yeah.
Our trustees are voted in.
So the kind of the way the breakdown is, your stewards are the spiritual head of the church. They take care of the spirituality, the services, and the finances. Your trustees take care of the building. They take care of building and the salaries. So like when they take care of the actual physical building and maintenance of that way, but then as far as like paying the bills and the salaries and that. And then our stewardess take care of our elements. And that means they take care of the altar, which is making sure that altar is correct. Making sure if I go back and close my eyes, they would be shining the brass. They would be ironing the cloths. They would prepare communion. They handle all of that. Those are like your real, those three are really run the church. Like there's times where a church may not have a pastor. If they don't have a pastor, if there's like, you know, where there's something that's happened or whatever.
We've been like that a couple times.
Yeah.
And the officers just run the church.
Your officers run the church.
Get someone to come in and preach. Mm-hmm. If we don't have anyone in the church.
Then your stewards do it.
But the officers will run the church and they should be able to. Shouldn't be any problem. So until they get appointed someone.
Elizabeth chimes in.
After they serve that term from year to year annually, if the pastor is a dud, then the stewards can make the final decision and say, we don't want that pastor back. And that pastor won't come back with legitimate reasoning.
Jeannie adds more.
Because there's a need in another church that's greater for that pastor than your church. Mm-hmm. And you're assigned someone else. That happens.
Like special skills.
Yeah.
So Jeannie, are you one of the officers?
Yes.
Yes, trustee.
You're the trustee?
Big time. Head. President.
Jeannie's the president.
The AME believe that the ultimate purposes are make available God's biblical principles, spread Christ's liberating gospel, and provide continuing programs which will enhance the entire social development of all people.
Your pastor would be like the president. Mm-hmm. The stewards, that's like your cabinet. So then you go your stewards and your trustees. Your stewards, your trustees, and your stewardess would be considered your official board because of what they do. And they are to model the way the church works. It is important with every church to have a very strong
structure. Yes.
Board, official board, you know, because then we assist with everything else in other areas. And then, like, we have evangelists, which Annette is one of our evangelists, you know, that has come through the church. And, you know, my mom is a trustee. Mr. Butch is a trustee. I'm a steward. So we've all kind of, you have to study, you have to know, you have to learn, you have to live, walk, so that you're able to answer the questions. And, you know, you have to have the church's best interest. The difference with us is we have the church's best interest. Yes, we want to take care of our pastor and have the interest of our pastor, but forefront, we have our church's best interest. And that's what's really important.
Any last thoughts on food customs, the shift of the historically Black neighborhood in relationship to the church today?
One of the other things that I see is food equals fellowship. And, you know, even when I was growing up, like, everybody in this room, even though we're not blood related, was family. I knew that they were safe. If I needed, or if I'm walking home and needed to go to the bathroom and couldn't make it home, I could knock on a door and go to the bathroom. Like, so I think because the church and the community were so directly, you know, together, now we have a commuter's church. you know, and so there's a difference there. You know, it was family. Like, we would go, we would eat, we would, it was almost like going to somebody's house for family dinner, but we didn't have to do it. We could do it right at the church. And I think that is a major difference. You know, when you have people that are members of the church, but maybe are not invested in the community, they go to church here because they like this church or this whatever. Then they go back home to their community.
Exactly.
So that is a major difference now.
For me, in learning about Richard Allen and working on this project, I'm just overwhelmed with joy. I didn't realize how what such a revolutionary he, Absalon, and the leadership were for Black people. They were even in a time when you could go to a Black church and the Black churches, the Methodist churches, weren't even segregated originally. So they came into religion in a time when everybody was there and they were worshiping together. And then it was over time that it shifted. And the wisdom and the power that they summoned from their ancestors coming out of slavery to say, nope, we're not going to do it, and to educate themselves, and then to go on to always have what I like to call that principle in Kwanzaa, Kuji Chagalia, self-determination. One of the things for me that stands out is back in 1793, when the yellow fever epidemic happened, the Free African Society worked heroically at the call of Benjamin Rush, who was one of their sponsors, and like, oh, we need help. So the Black folks got together and they were the nurses, and they helped the rich folks in Philadelphia, right up the street from Swarthmore, right? And what was amazing is at the end, Matthew Carey alleged through pamphlets that the Black folks were taking advantage of the white people. Well, Allen and Jones got Carey to publish the truth. They forced him to reprint an accurate account of the work that was done by Black people. And for me, this is incredible because it's the first copyright given to Blacks in America. Go ahead.
Why
the Historically Black Neighborhood of Swarthmore podcast credits. Project lead and narration, Janine Osayande. Producer, Lamont Hurley. HBNS Community Advisory Council, Janine Osayande, Makeda Redmond, Thaddeus Adams, Arnold Adams, Doris Ruley, Alicia Ruley-Knock, Kim Darnell, Jeannie Terrell, Elizabeth Annette Lee Holmes, and Reverend Catherine Brownlee. With support from the Philadelphia Folklore Project staff, Naomi Sturm Vijay Singha, and Eric Cesar Morales. Veronica Aplank, PFP consultant for determination of eligibility for federal recognition, Wesley AME Church, Swarthmore, PA. Swarthmore Race Research, Amy Beth Sasung. Music, Spoken Hand, Percussion Orchestra. The Making a Home Place podcast is a collaboration between the Philadelphia Folklore Project and the Historically Black Neighborhood of Swarthmore. Lead funding support is provided by the National Trust for Historic Preservation's Telling the Full History Preservation Fund, the Mid-Atlantic Arts Foundation, the Borough of Swarthmore, and the Anne Bernstein Richan Peace Action Fund.